welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Good morning, it's Jessica. How's everyone doing? Thanks for tuning in to episode 140 of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. It's so good to have you here. Today I have a fantastic guest today. It is Monica Packer. Monica is the host of the podcast About Progress. And actually, I was interviewed on that podcast on episode 26 a few weeks ago. So if you haven't checked that out, I definitely encourage you to go check that out and hear more about my journey. And About Progress is specifically about overcoming perfectionism and just about enjoying the journey and becoming the best self that you can. It's about the progress, not the perfection. I resonate so much with that message, and I know that a lot of you in the audience will as well. So Monica is a mom of three. She's a blogger, she's a podcaster, and today we're talking specifically about her journey through overcoming her perfectionism, both through body image issues, identity, things like that. We have the best conversation today, and I know you're going to get so much out of it. Enjoy getting to know Monica today. Let's get to it. All right, I want to welcome Monica Packer. Hi, Monica.
Hi, Jessica.
Monica, it was so fun being on your podcast About Progress a couple weeks ago. Thanks so much for having me.
I loved having you on. It was such a good interview. People should all listen to you. You were so incredible.
Oh, well, it was fun to have the opportunity, but now I understand why my guests might be a little nervous to get on the podcast with me. I've never had the tables turned before.
Oh, yeah. It's nerve-wracking.
It totally is. But today we're talking about you, so I feel better, and I hope that you'll feel okay, too. Will you just give people a little background on yourself and your family, Monica?
Sure. I live in the San Francisco Bay Area with my husband and our three kids, and they are 5, 4, and 1. And I'm a former middle school English and history teacher, and now I'm a stay-at-home mom. And I have some side hobbies that make me no money and take up a lot of time, but are really fun for me. And those are my blog and my podcast.
That's so awesome. What made you want to start a podcast?
Oh, goodness. I think that that relates to my story a lot. But the nutshell is I just had always wanted to write a blog, actually. That's how I first started. And I just put it off for so many years. I love writing. But I eventually just decided, you know what? I want a space on the internet where someone can share the real parts of their life. Like, I didn't want to have a blog or an Instagram account or anything that was kind of lifestyle based, even though that's great, but I didn't want it to be like, hey, look how perfect my life is and how awesome I am and feel jealous of me. I wanted it to be a real space where I'm just sharing my heart and the things I'm trying to work on and just the realistic point of view of how hard life can be, but how great if you're still trying and just working on yourself.
Yeah, and I think our missions for the podcast are so aligned with just not striving for perfection, but it's all about the journey and about learning from your mistakes, learning from your circumstances, and being better because of it and being stronger because of it, and at least being reflective of the experiences we've had in order to learn those really important lessons.
Yes, I would say so. We're very similar. And listening to you actually gave me that boost to start the podcast, because I listened to your podcast. I love podcasts for years and years. And I've always been interested in broadcasting and journalism, all of that. But I just have always thought about doing some kind of show, you know, that it interested me, but I never thought I could until I heard your podcast. And I'm like, look at this amazing podcast. And she's like me. She doesn't have a background in journalism, and she's doing such a good job. And I just thought, well, maybe I can try this too. So I have to thank you, Jessica, because listening to you and how you've interviewed people and the stories I've heard, it gave me the courage to try it myself.
Oh, that's amazing. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah, if I can do it, anybody can do it, right? And I'm not a techie person, and, you know, you may not be either, but I feel like podcasting is a very low barrier to entry. And so if you have an idea for a podcast, or you have a message that you would want to hear in your ear while you're multitasking during the day or driving or whatever, maybe other people would want to hear it too. And it's a very low cost way to kind of pursue that medium. And so yeah, even when it's not making you any money, it doesn't cost you a lot of money either to produce. So yeah, I think podcasting is a great way for people to share their message. And I think it's kind of the new way of blogging. Well, tell me more about your background, Monica. Tell me about your life pre-motherhood and kind of what you envisioned for your family once you decided that you wanted to add children and things like that.
Yeah, I was raised in Utah. I have six siblings. I'm the fifth. And I mean, a nutshell is I just have always loved school and loved learning. I've loved doing everything I could. I just have a lot of interests. So I grew up doing a little of everything, lots of dance and music, a little drama in high school, leadership stuff. And I went to BYU and I loved BYU and learning there. It was also a really hard time emotionally, which I'm sure we'll get into, but my husband and I married. I was 21. He was 24. And we moved my whole life to California. And that's when I had to figure out what my big priorities were in terms of family life. And, you know, I was still so young. I knew I wanted a little time before I started having kids. But I knew I had to decide if I was going to go get my PhD, which was my original goal, or if I was going to try to plan ahead for my family. And I mean, the nutshell version there is I went with plan B. And for me, that was becoming an English teacher and knowing that I would start my family, you know, 3 years after we got married instead of 10, which is what it would have been if I had done the PhD program.
Yeah.
So that kind of was how we went into that.
Sure.
Try to think of anything else.
Yeah, no, that's great. And so let's dive a little bit deeper into what were some of those issues that you faced previously that made it kind of a hard emotional time during college and high school and things like that?
Yeah, so this goes back to my tendencies. I was born with some big tendencies to just want to be perfect. And you know, sometimes it wasn't for the right reason, honestly. I mean, sometimes it was just wanting to be good and to succeed. But I've learned, you know, with age that a lot of that drive came from wanting people to admire me. So, I, from a very young age, I started down a road of being very hard on myself and perfectionist minded. I thought that was a very good trait. And, I set out to be a type A. You know, I don't know how many people decided, like when they learned in health class in seventh grade, there's two types of personalities. There's A or B. And they went into it. I'm like, I'm going to be A. Like that's, you know, you're A if you decide you're going to be A.
Right. I'm going to control everything, including my personality type, right?
Including my personality. Yes. So from a very young age for me, I was just obsessed with being perfect. A lot of that came from my passion with ballet. There's a huge part of being perfect there. There's a huge part of, you know, fine-tuning everything about your body. And you know, a lot of that goes into how you eat. So about 10 years, all through my teenage years, I had just these rituals about food and my body and exercise. And I went in and out of what I can see now was disordered eating. And I always had a really warped view of my body and a very harsh view of it. And a harsh view of myself too. And it was in every area of my life. But it wasn't until I got to college that it became a huge problem for me. That's when, you know, I had a really hard breakup my freshman year. And that the depression that followed for me kind of made those issues I'd had and I'd practiced for 10 years on and on roar its head. And I went down a path there that was really hard to get out of. And then I dated another guy. And then, you know how those things go. I just wasn't in a good place mentally. And I definitely had some big problems, and they controlled every part of my life. I mean, I can't underestimate how out of control my life was at a certain, you know, at many points, but enough that I was basically a shell of myself. And, you know, doing really well on the exterior, I hid it from everyone. No one knew any of this. And, but on the inside, I mean, I was at many parts suicidal. I mean, it was that controlling.
I know. And I hear this again and again. It's like our ability to keep that mask on and to keep everyone else from knowing what's on the inside. It's so common. And whether it's to the extreme that you faced or whether it's just slightly where you're feeling insecure on a day-to-day basis about, you know, just a certain aspect of your life, that can just rob you of so much freedom to be who you really are, who is good enough and is great, you know?
Yes, and it did. I mean, it robbed me of my life, honestly.
Sure.
And it's robbed me of years. I'm getting emotional now, but I mean, it was 11 years ago that I realized I really, really needed help. I was on a study abroad in London, and I was studying these things that I was so passionate about. I was, you know, at the epicenter of the world with culture and going to these museums and seeing all these amazing sights and studying. I love humanities, so I was studying humanities, and it was everything that I love, and my head was not in it. Mm. You know, I was at a cathedral, and all I was thinking about was when I could eat my two cucumbers I had packed for my lunch, or I would wake up in the morning dreaming about food. I would, you know, run in the morning and stew over my breakfast. You know, I was not present.
Mm.
And that's when I realized I was in bad shape. And
sure. And can
that
I ask
was
you,
robbing me of life.
What was the turning point in realizing? Because sometimes when you're in the midst of it, you like you don't even see what's going on or how far gone you are or what the source is or things like that. Was there a minute or a turning point where you really saw your life for what it was? And did you know how to get help?
Well, as these things go, there were a few turning points. The ones that really stand out to me was you know, for so long, I have to say, like, this wasn't, I was doing this because I thought I was being healthy and in control.
Mm.
You know, I wasn't, and I did want to be thin, of course, that was a part of it, but I didn't realize how unhealthy my healthy habits were for a long time, even a couple years. But one of the turning points for me was when I was on my study abroad, I was just so hungry. I was so hungry. They had dinner at 5, and one of my rituals then was to not eat after dinner. So, you know, you're not eating till like 8 o'clock the next day. So I think I ate like a granola bar, and I couldn't stop. I ate like 5 granola bars in a row, which for me was a lot of food at the time. I mean, now I probably wouldn't be so upset about that, but
yeah,
to me, it was like the worst thing I've ever done. And I was so despondent, and I felt so scared and ashamed. And that started other patterns for me. So that was the first real time I was like out of control. And I was trying to control that more. So it turned into these really bad patterns. So it wasn't until I got out of my study abroad and I was working on it for a couple months that I had those moments, one after the next, and they got worse and worse and worse. And my fear and my hatred of myself and my panic over it worsened. So I was a mentor to freshman students for a couple of years there. So I knew about, they had free counseling at my college,
mm-hmm.
and I had offered those services to many of my students, but
of course you
know,
did. Yeah.
Yeah. And so luckily though, I knew that was offered to me.
Mm.
So when I realized that I wanted to just die instead of, keep up with the patterns and try, I decided to go in and take an intake test. And I mean, I gave them the intake test over the desk, and, you know, they had someone look at it really quick, and they're like, you need to come back now.
We're not going to let you leave. Yeah.
Yeah, they took me right in. I was that bad. I was like probably 10 out of 10 in all the areas of depression and anxiety and stress, and it took a very long time to get over, you know, to move past that. But those are the turning points for me, I would say. And a lot of that is numb. I don't remember
sure.
a huge chunk of college, honestly.
Yeah, and that's so sad. Right? Because I'm sure there were great moments too, and happy moments and accomplishments, but the hard stuff is numbed as well as the good stuff. And that is just so heartbreaking to think back on your life. And if you picture your kids in that type of situation 20 years from now, gosh, doesn't that just rip you up?
It absolutely does. I mean, it makes me so sad to know the things I missed out on, you know, parties and things with friends out of fear, you know, but I also missed out on so much just inner joy with myself, you know, that I wish I could take it back, but I feel like I'm taking it back day by day still.
Absolutely.
You know, I'm earning it back still now, and I'm proud of that.
Yeah, you're using it now for good, and nobody can change the past, and we can reflect and rehash as much as we want, but it can become a blessing, and it can become productive when you're able to not want to change any of it, but to be able to use it, right?
It changes the past for me, definitely.
And that's what you've done, which is just so beautiful. And so for people that might feel like they're in a downward spiral, or they're in a situation that they do have some control over in terms of their own happiness and their own peace with themselves, what were some of those steps that you took that were really helpful and valuable to you in order to get your thinking correct and in your body and your mind more in line?
You know, I mentioned therapy, and that was helpful. I only did that for a year, and I wish I had kept that up. I have done it now since I've had a couple therapists now later on, like, you know, 11 years later, I'm in therapy now for it still, because I wish I had kept it up. I thought I was on my way to getting better, but that's one thing I would say is reach out for help and stick with it longer than you think you should. And the other thing is share it with someone. I mean, this is still fairly new news to a lot of my friends and family, even 11 years later. And I regret that mask that I kept on out of shame and self-protection, and I don't want people to worry about me. But I wish I had been a little more open, because I have learned now, as I'm open about it, that the power is taken away from my illness, you know, that I have gained more control over my life in sharing my struggles. And a lot of that still goes back to me still wanting to be viewed as perfect for people. So that was my fault. And, you know, I would say the last thing is to think about what you want your life to be and how you want to live. And even though I was so stuck in so many cycles that had already been developed over 10 years and practiced, you know, by that point, I knew this is not what I wanted. And I knew I didn't want to be this shell, and I wanted to live and to not be obsessed. And I think that's what we have to think about, is what do you really want? And that has to win over these other things that aren't as important that you also wanted. But that was especially helpful for me.
I get why you started your podcast.
Yeah.
I get it.
Yeah.
I get it. Oh, that's so powerful. Did you believe that your life could really be different when you were in the thick of it and when you were in those early stages of getting help? Did you really think you could change your mind and your body and the way you thought about yourself and saw life in general? Did you believe you could change the way you saw all those things?
You know, I did and I didn't. I've always been a determined person, and I've always been able to, when I wanted something, go after it. So at the beginning, I mean, I was working on my recovery, like, I'm going, it's still that perfectionist part. I'm like, well, I'm going to fix this,
right?
And I'm going to do it now, and it's going to be fixed.
And faster than everybody else,
Faster than everybody else, and boy, that was not what happened. It has taken me a decade to get to where I am, and so in many ways, I had to believe I could change, but I also actually had to know that it was going to be a long road, and that was, in a weird way, empowering. Like, I do remember there are a few moments of therapy that I do remember, even though most of it is like a fog. But my therapist, I came one day and I was like, can I fix this? Is this a problem that I'm going to have forever? And he's like, it might be. And I was like, oh, good. Okay, that's good to hear. You know, it's like the opposite of what you would expect. But for me, I was like, okay, that actually makes me feel better because it's not my fault that I can't fix this right away and that it's going to be a long road. So it was both ways. I needed to believe it, but I also needed to know that it was going to be a long road, and it has been.
Yeah, and here you are thinking, if I'm good enough, if I try hard enough, I'll be able to do what have the outcome that I want. But really, it was not in your control. The timeline was not in your control. You couldn't effort your way to recovery. But by committing and changing your expectations that you're working towards that, you're making progress, that had to be enough day by day in order to keep you going.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, the way these things go with any kind of mental health issue, sometimes it gets a lot worse before it gets better. And that was the case for me. And, you know, there are low lows and it's a roller coaster ride. Sure. But I think if you keep that consistency and keep trying, years down the road, you will see growth, even months. You just have to keep looking back and compare yourself and see like, okay, I'm down again. I'm at a low. But I've been worse, and look how far I've come.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, and just believing that any amount of progress is great, and is getting you ultimately where you need to go, and you will get there. But being able to change the way you see the timeline and change the way you see your part in controlling how and when things happen, that in itself gives you a lot of freedom.
Absolutely,
I love that. And so as you were pursuing, you know, you were getting married and then you were thinking about starting a family and you moved, and that can add a whole new host of new anxieties and you know, levels of stress. Were you worried about if you were in a good place to become a mom? And did that play into when you wanted to start your family?
It did. I'm glad that you thought about asking about that because it did. And that's why I decided to go with plan B. Mm. You know, some people, I mean, they can go get their PhD and be a wife and a mom and all at the same time. But I didn't feel stable enough for that at that point. So, yeah, I did worry about that. And that was a part of the factor. I don't know. I guess it didn't let it stop me.
Planning. Absolutely. Well, I'm glad it didn't. So tell me about that. Tell me about getting pregnant and then having your first baby.
You know, we have been so blessed. We've been able to have our kids really easily. And I'm getting emotional about that too, because I have so many friends who haven't been able to.
Yeah.
And that's one thing I think is one of the biggest blessing of my life was to be able to get pregnant easily. Cause I thank God for that. Cause I was, even though my behaviors were better, my thoughts about myself and my body have been largely hate driven, you know. And I know if I had struggled with that, I would have gone back to some really dark times that way. So we were so fortunate. When we were ready, we were able to get pregnant, and my oldest came. Like my kids, they have, I don't know how to say it, they came good and ready to be here, and they came quick, and I didn't have time for drugs for my first two. They came, and they are intense.
Oh my gosh.
They're intense personalities, and they're so different, my oldest two, and my youngest, thank goodness, he just goes along for the ride. But it was a huge adjustment, and it shocked me. It really shocked me because I was a middle school teacher, and I was, I mean, not to brag, I was a good teacher.
I'm sure you were. Yeah.
I was an awesome teacher. I loved those little weirdos, you know, and I was looking forward to being a mom, and I was looking forward to being home with my baby. And, she humbled me in a lot of ways, and she struggled a lot right from day one. I knew in the hospital that she was going to be a sensitive, sweet and stubborn girl, and she's been that way. So the first baby, I'm so glad she was my hardest, because it made my other babies seem a lot easier. Mm. I mean, she just was sad. The world was too much. It was too overwhelming. And it's been something that has been that way for her whole life, and we've grown a lot. But that first year was really difficult. But the silver lining, it was just me and her, you know? And I could do that for her. I could go do all the research. I could read all the books. I could go to all the doctor appointments and demand different tests. And I could fiddle with our diet and figure things out to help her. And I'm so glad she was my first that way.
Yeah, it is amazing how they come to us kind of when they need to, right? And my first was super hard as well, as we talked about a lot on the podcast with you. And yeah, when you have that one-on-one time to devote, it's still hard. It's still very, very hard. That's not to be underestimated, but at least you have that time and attention. So then when you brought in your second, how was that continuously also dealing with the challenges with your first as well?
Well, that's when things got a lot tougher.
Yeah.
We had them 21 months apart,
Yeah.
and you know, sometimes I've really questioned my choice to do that, but because my son, our second, he is the exact opposite from his sister, and in ways that have been extremely challenging for her. I mean, she is really sensitive to sensory stuff, and he is really sensory seeking. So, like at 6 months old, he would sit there in the car seat and like clap just to get her to scream. And he, like, really young. And I was like, oh man, I'm in for some trouble here. And
Right.
that has proven to be the case. I mean, they're like yin and yang. And between when he was a year to just young 4 years now, it was a huge learning curve for the two of them. But I have to say, he's kind of been her built-in exposure therapy. And she has grown so much because of him. In a really weird way. I mean, it was so hard, especially after the birth of my third. Those two, it was my oldest two that were extremely like challenging all day, every day, really, really difficult because I'm trying to manage their very different personalities and some real issues that my daughter has. And but over time, it's proven to be a big blessing that they're so different and that they're so close in age. I mean, they're getting along, and he's helped her grow so much.
I think that's something we don't think about very often, really how the siblings serve each other and having those polar opposite personalities at first seem like, the worst thing in the world and like how could we ever make this work? But really being put into difficult situations kind of forces you into that learning curve, right? Into that refining and learning how to deal with difficult people and things that agitate you and that's really profound how the siblings can help each other in that way. And now to see them being refined by one another to the point where they're actually getting along. I mean, what an amazing, byproduct of all of that. And I think for us as well, sometimes I think we're given the kids that are going to get us where we need to go as people, right? You're a different mom today because of the children that you've had. I'm a different mom because of the children that I've had, and they've taught me lessons that only these kids could teach me, and the weaknesses that I have, having those put to the test by these specific children. That's a really powerful thing to think how they're part of our life story, and we can kind of appreciate them more in those hard moments if we can try and see it. I mean, in the moment, it's super hard to try and see it like that. But in the big picture, if we can see it like that, I think it can be really helpful in how we approach those hard aspects of our relationship with them.
And you know, I do feel like what you said about even me as a parent, I needed these kids. I needed to be humbled, and I have been big time. I needed to learn a lot about letting go. And I have grown a lot, and I'm just so grateful for their willingness to forgive me as I stumbled my way through it. And I hope they don't remember some things, but I'm glad for how I've grown and what they've taught me.
Absolutely. And I mean, motherhood is anything but perfect, obviously. And when you are prone to those perfectionistic type tendencies, golly, it's just being like thrown into the ring and just like, okay, we got to figure this out. Thinking back to your ballet days, I want to ask you, would you put your child in an activity like ballet or like gymnastics or a type of activity where there is such a focus on perfectionism. I mean, it's a beautiful art. Obviously, you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
I've done things as well that are really on the micro level, where every little thing is nitpicked and pitch and for singing and things. But there's a lot of detriment that comes with people who have certain types of personalities, and it's a lot of time that those activities that are a good fit for those type of perfectionistic type people.
I know, right?
But what do you think about putting your kids in those types of activities that might lead them down a road of perpetuating that perfectionism?
Well, so for many years, I was pretty vocal about it. I am not going to put my daughter in ballet.
Mm.
I'm never going to do that to her. And it was more because I felt like the majority of my friends that I grew up dancing with, I mean, I danced for 14 years. The girls, most of them had problems some way or another.
Sure.
Whether it was before, during, or during or after our dancing. But I don't know, as I've gotten into mothering, I've just learned, you know what? They do have their personalities. They do have their tendencies. And that doesn't mean they can't explore things that are going to push them and challenge them. But I do think we have to be careful about it. So it's just more of like monitoring how they're engaging with. I think I could have been a soccer player and have been just as OCD.
Sure.
And just as hard on myself.
Sure, sure.
So I've kind of learned, you know, I can't eliminate a whole activity based off of my experience with it, but I can monitor how my kids are engaged in something. I mean, I do want them to learn how to do hard things. So it's a tricky balance. I haven't quite figured that out, like how to push them and also relax. But I mean, right now we're not really into a lot of stuff yet, but I've changed my mindset on that. I think it's more for me about just monitoring them.
Yeah, I totally agree. And having been what you've been through, you're much more aware of the types of conversations probably that you'll want to have with your children if they want to go into a certain activity where you think, you know, you're just noticing certain, you know, aspects of their personality being challenged or dynamics or things like that. You're just going to be cognizant of those things. And you can't wrap your kids in a bubble. You know, like they cannot escape pain. And if anything, it's better to have them challenged and put in hard situations sometimes, but feel supported through that. And if they're unprepared and there's not conversations going on, they're going to drown. They're going to feel lost in that, right? And we just have to be that safe place for our kids to go when they're looking in the mirror and seeing themselves as fat when really they're 87 pounds, right?
Yeah.
But that's a hard conversation. Yep. One of my guests, Jamie Ivey, just talked about how you have to bring up the hard conversations with your kids because they're not going to do it, right? Mm-hmm. They think either you don't know about it or it's awkward or there's not really a time or a place. And so you have to be looking and watching and monitoring what are the conversations we need to have at each age and stage, not just after something's occurred, but if you can kind of predict a little bit, oh man, that's going to be so much easier to deal with versus doing damage control.
Well, and we're trying to grow them into adults is what I keep reminding myself. Mm-hmm. And they won't have me hovering around them.
Yes.
But the high majority of their lives, I'm trying to prepare an adult here. And the way that I'm going to be successful in doing that is by exposing them to hard things and teaching them how to deal with it independently and with help too. But, and we talk about making mistakes every day and trying things that scare us every day because she has to. I mean, she has to face it all the time, even with just her brother making noise all the time or being in her space.
And so we've talked about how motherhood is not ever going to be perfect. You're doing and redoing tasks all day long. So how do you, in the stage that you're in right now with three little ones, how do you find sanity in your home when there's messes everywhere? How do you recharge and how do you feel fulfilled in this role that is so counter to kind of to what your personality might be craving?
This has been something I've been learning so much. You know, for me, perfectionism, for some reason, people think that it's only being overachievers. But for me, it was being an overachiever. And it was also being an underachiever. It was not doing things that challenged me because out of fear. You know, fear of not being perfect, fear of not doing things right, fear of failure, all that. But so a big part of my mothering journey has been learning that I actually do need to have dreams and goals and that I do need to push myself and to try with my own interests. Because for a long time I didn't, out of fear of all those things I mentioned, but also out of this idea I had in my head that that's not what mothers do, that mothers sacrifice everything. And I think that actually doesn't serve our kids. It doesn't serve ourselves. It doesn't serve them. This is what I've been learning, is that in order for me to be able to handle the Groundhog Day that we mentioned in, when you spoke with me on my podcast, you know, if I'm not going to literally cry over another cup of spilled milk, I need to be fulfilled myself.
Sure.
Otherwise, I'm going to be resentful of all those little things all day, every day that I do over and over and over and over without, you know, thanks or recognition, because they're young. They're not going to recognize it. But if I'm centered in my own wishes and desires and passions, I can handle life so much better with them and the ebbs and flows, and really relish what we're doing and not sweat the small stuff as much. So that's been a big thing for me.
I think that's huge. And I'm sure you get this question a lot, as do I, like, oh, how do you have time to do the podcast? How do you have time to do that? Da, 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 da. And it's like, you make time for the things that are meaningful to you. And I feel like a better mom when I'm pursuing these passion projects on the side that, yes, do take time. But ultimately, I would have been like probably wasting my time in some other way.
Yeah,
you know, totally. Or stressing over things, or to pour yourself into something you're really passionate about can only make you a stronger, better version of yourself. And for me, that makes me a better mom. And that's what it sounds like you're saying as well.
It has made me a better mom. And, you know, I am stressed in a lot of ways, but it's like a happier stress for some reason. It's one I can handle a little bit better because it's filling my well, and it's allowing me to grow myself so I can help my kids. And, you know, I was thinking, for some people, I think, can be really daunted by what we're talking about, though, because they're like, do I need to start a huge thing and spend a lot of time in order to be fulfilled?
Right.
It's not that. One of the things that has been big for me is learning that I'm actually the creative type. Mm. Like, I didn't think I was a creative type forever because I thought I was too type A for that. Yeah. And I've actually learned the opposite. I learned I'm totally the creative type. And, you know, that's doing things that anybody can do. That's, for me, is I love interior design. So I just love reading about it and fiddling with my house. Or I like learning how to do different art things. So it might be learning how to watercolor. Or it's exercise. For me, running exercise has been a huge outlet for me. I like to do that before the kids are up because it's my only time to myself.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, that's a whole other thing. I mean, running alone was a huge part of my recovery. Actually. Mm. So, you know, it's figuring out what things bring you joy, and it can be 5 or 10 minutes, you know, it doesn't have to be a huge ordeal that causes a lot of stress. I think that those outlets, those filling your wells, they can be on a smaller scale.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, it could be tackling a book list, you know, like treating yourself at the library, not just going into the kids section, but then spending 5 minutes to go over into your section and finding a book that you are really interested in, and not just something that you feel like you have to read, but something you want to read, you know? And yeah, it can be anything that really fills you up. Like, if you could think, okay, if you had 5, 10 minutes only, what would you want to be doing in the next 5 or 10 minutes? Would you be writing? Would you be reading? Would you be starting a podcast or Googling how to start a podcast? Would you?
Yeah.
It can be literally anything. Or maybe you are just playing with your kids without guilt and you should be starting dinner. Just give yourself that permission to do what you really want to do, because ultimately you're just going to be happier, and the dishes will still be there. The laundry will still be there. You'll still have your stuff and your issues and things, but gosh, to really fill your tank by spending 5 or 10 minutes on yourself doing something you love, that has been so transformative. And I've heard so many people talking about meditation lately. Do you do that at all?
Oh my goodness. This has been a huge thing on my mind lately.
Seems like everyone's talking about it.
Yeah, I feel like I'm really getting all signs, all flags are saying,
do meditation.
I actually do it with my kids, but I don't do it myself yet.
Sure.
I have a couple apps I downloaded just this past week. Honestly, for myself, Yeah, that's something I do want to do, because I do still have a hard time quieting my mind. And, you know, mindfulness has been a huge part of me learning to, you know, to get better because of getting out of my cycle of thoughts. But I didn't know that was the name for what I was doing, you know? So I do think that is something that would be really beneficial for me.
Absolutely. Yeah, I've done it kind of irregularly, but that is one of my goals, especially with summer approaching, knowing that kids are going to be home all day long. It's kind of overwhelming to me, not knowing that we're going to have that structure like we do have during the school year. So that's going to be really helpful to me to have a few of those things in place where I know I have those little markers to look forward to, whether it's, you know, you taking a run first thing in the morning, or it's, you know, planning out your meals and going grocery shopping by yourself, or whatever it is that are your sanity savers and get you looking forward to things during the day. Having those little benchmarks during the day or during the week, I think can be total game changers.
Yeah. And, you know, it's also finding which ways, I mean, I listened to this whole podcast called On Being, and it was about how running is a form of meditation. And I've really identified with that. I'm like, that's what I've been doing, I guess. That's why it's been so transformative. I mean, running saved my life. Like literally it has saved my life.
Wow.
Multiple times. And I think it's that release, that chance to get away. And you know, what can it be for someone? That's what I think, what can be your own form of meditation and find it.
I love that. I love that so much. I feel like we could just chat all day and we're so on the same page. But coming back to your podcast about progress, what is the thing that you've learned the most? You started with one episode thinking, well, you know, how's this going to go? Who's going to listen? What has kind of transpired with your podcast and what have you been surprised about?
Well, this whole thing has been a giant experiment for me to see if I can practice what I preach and to face your fears and to just try something, to just do something. And it's been surprising to me just how, what a ripple effect doing something that scares you is. And I have seen it in all areas of my life. It's like starting this podcast and just doing it. Regardless of its success, regardless of the stress and the not knowing even how to do it, the challenges, its ripple effect in my life has been really transformative. And that's been really shocking to me. And it's also been shocking to me to see how the interviews I've been doing, they've changed my life.
Yeah.
I mean, I didn't realize that this was going to be for me. I thought I was going to try to help other people. And this is really selfishly, it's helped me so much.
I love that. And I feel the exact same way with my show. And I think that totally helps when people online and having an online presence, you know, you can get consumed with numbers and how people are listening or how many people are reading or how much you're getting paid. But really, when you're feeling so fulfilled by the work you're doing and the conversations you're having, it's like, even if I'm the only one that hears this, I'm going to be different because of this, or I'm going to think about something differently because of this. And that has been so powerful in my life as well. So I love that you have that for yourself.
Definitely. And, you know, one of my big goals is, I think sometimes people think that this whole, what I'm doing is it's all for recovering perfectionists, and it's not. It's for everyone. It's for everyone who wants a little kick in the bum, you know, and to hear from people who've been through some really hard things, but risen above it, and what they've learned about how to find meaning in their life and purpose and how to pursue goals and have some dreams and even encounter failure. So I don't know. I do feel like I'm finding my people in a lot of ways.
Oh, I love that. Sometimes when I find a new podcast, I have a hard time knowing where to start. Is there an episode that you recommend starting with? Should we start at the very beginning of your show, or is there a certain episode that really stood out to you? Where should I start?
There's so many.
I know.
Feel like you could just pick one and it will give you a good glimpse of what it's all about. One that was especially transformative for me was my episode with Dr. Jennifer Finlayson Fife.
Okay.
And she is a psychotherapist. She focuses on marriage and sex, actually. But we talked about perfectionism. And she went, I mean, people have listened to this podcast a couple times a day. They've written me to tell me just how transformative it is. And my goal when I interviewed her was to just shut up and let her talk. Because what she said is so transformative. And she just talks about how perfectionism is really indulgent and it's a lack of development and maturity. And she turns it all on its head. And that one is a really, that's just a transformative one.
That's awesome. But
there are some fun ones too. There's one with Sassy Red Lipstick, Sarah Tripp. She's a fashion blogger. She has like 100,000 followers. And she's all about body positivity and accepting your curves. And she was really fun to talk to. So there's like some deep, really hard ones. Like, oh my goodness, there's a lot of deep and hard ones about, we talk a lot about mental health, surprisingly. I didn't realize this was going to be a podcast about mental health, but it has been a big part of that too. But there's also some more lighthearted ones that are a lot of fun.
That's great. And you're good with the titles too. So just by reading the titles, you can kind of say, okay, that one seems like it's going to click well with me so I think that's great.
That's one of the things I always worry about. So thanks for saying that.
Yeah, no, I think that's really helpful because it's true. Like not every episode is going to resonate with everybody on the same level. And that's fine. Yeah. And that's fine. But to resonate with the people that really need to hear it, it's so great that you're putting out these amazing interviews. You're doing such a good job, Monica.
Thanks. I really appreciate that.
So, so good. Well, I always ask my guests one final question. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Well, I had a chance to think about this because I am a big fan of your podcast. Man, that's a hard question for people to answer. And it was for me too. I just have two thoughts that came to mind. And one is, it's supposed to be hard. I wish I had just told myself, this is supposed to be bone-suckingly hard. That's what it's supposed to be like. And it's for a purpose. You're going to be better because of how hard this is. And the second is, it'll come. I really struggled feeling like I was fumbling around with motherhood, especially in the beginning, because I had such a hard baby. I didn't feel like it came naturally to me. And I did struggle with some guilt over that. And I've learned, though, that it'll come. The ability to gauge your children and gauge what their needs are and your ability to fight for them and to work hard with them, it'll come. So will the patience. So will the letting go. So will the joy. There are going to be hard rounds of sadness and depression and worry and fear, but the good will come too. And it just takes time and practice.
That is beautiful and so consistent with what you've been talking about on this episode and what you've been working on your whole life. And I think that's really beautiful. Thank you for sharing
that.
Monica, where can people find you online?
Well, I would start with my website. That's aboutprogress.com. That's where some of my show notes are, and you can stream my interviews from there. But I also write on there too. So there's lots of everything that I'm interested in. So that's where you get to see my Jane of all trades, master of none personality. And they can also find me on Facebook and Instagram at About Progress. And my podcast is, I think, like anywhere podcasts are. So.
Okay. Awesome. I know it always surprised me, like, oh, somebody listened on Podbean. I've never even heard of Podbean, but
I'm not on Podbean.
Great. But I didn't apply. So you may be on Podbean. I don't know.
Huh. Okay. I'll have to look into that.
I think there's a network. I don't know. Podcast stuff. Who even knows?
Yes, I know. There's so much I'm still learning.
Me too. Well, Monica, thank you so much for sharing your journey today. This was so powerful. I learned so much from you, and I know that my audience is going to love getting to know you, and they need to immediately go add About Progress to their queue.
Thank you so much, Jessica. I feel the same way about you, and thank you for changing my life. Honestly, you have changed my life too.
Oh, well, we need to meet in person so we can hug it out.
Let's do it.
Have an awesome day, Monica.
You too.
I love chatting with people who feel like instant friends. And to me, Monica definitely felt like an instant friend who I could just open up to and share my stuff with, and hearing about her life and her struggles. Whenever we share, it just brings down so many barriers. And so I encourage you to do the same. Check out Monica's podcast, About Progress. You can do that and definitely leave a review if you like what you're hearing, because that helps people to find the podcast. And if you haven't left a review for my show, I would love it if you would do that as well. You can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3 or on Facebook at Extraordinary Moms Podcast. And also on our website, you can find show notes and pictures of Monica and all our past guests on ExtraordinaryMomsPodcast.com. Thank you so much for tuning in this week. I love having you here. And we'll see you next week for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.